everybody. I'm Neil Rosen. Welcome to another edition of Sitting Around Talking Movies. And I'm sitting around, as always, with Bill Bregoli.
That would be me.
And I'm sitting around, as always, with Bill McCuddy.
I don't like to brag, but I'm sitting in the best chair.
You are sitting in the best chair.
All right.
And we're going to talk about Boy Erased. We're going to talk about The Nutcracker and The Four Realms. And we're going to talk about Just in Time for Election Day. Is it The Front Runner?
Front Runner.
And let's start by talking about Boy Erased. And I'll take the lead on this, as they say. So this is a big year for Lucas Hedges. If you don't know who Lucas Hedges is, he was in Manchester by the Sea, and he was also in the movie Lady Bird. And
best movie last year.
So Boy Erased is about, well, it's a very, very interesting subject matter. It's about, is it based on a true story, by the way?
Of course. No, I mean, stay to the end? Of course it's based on a true story.
Oh, okay.
At the end, they tell you this guy is in New York, blah, 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 blah.
I saw it at the Hampton Film Festival about a month ago. So, right,
did you walk out before the end was done?
I remember, you're right. There was that crawl on the end of the thing where you read the thing. Okay, so it's based on a true story about a kid that is gay, and he comes out to his parents, who are played by Nicole Kidman and Russell Crowe. And Russell Crowe is...
by the way, looks exactly like the real guy.
Well, he's
doesn't mean it's good casting, because I have a little bit of a problem with Russell Crowe in this movie, but he looks exactly like the guy.
So Russell Crowe is a reverend, part-time reverend, full-time
Ford dealer.
An auto dealership. And
have you driven a gay lately?
So when it is discovered that his son is gay, played by Lucas Hedges, they not only don't accept this, they send him to a pray away the gay conversion, intense conversion therapy group.
Or whatever.
Live there for an unspecified amount of time. It's not like a week. It's an open-ended thing.
Well, that's one of the cool things about the movie, is that they don't know how long the kids are supposed to be there, which is, I think, one of the most interesting parts of the movie. Like, you send a child there, and you're thinking that they're going to be there for 48 hours or 72 hours or a week or whatever, and somebody at some point in the movie goes, no, you don't get it. You're going to be here forever, which is kind of creepy cool, but...
also creepy because they take their money.
Of course, yeah. They're in the business of trying to cure people from being gay, which is crazy on its... Yeah, but anyway, continue.
Well, it was written and directed by Joel Edgerton, who we know mainly as an actor, although he did direct another film. And he was in the movie Loving. He was an actor in the movie Loving last year. And he's in this
movie.
And
The Gift. He directed and wrote The Gift.
And he did. And he's in this movie... and he plays the guy who's kind of running this Pray Away the Gay conversion therapy group. And there is an interest. I won't tip this off, but if you do stay and read at the end of the movie, since this is based on a true story, there's a very interesting thing that they say about the fate of that particular character, which I found to be very, if you remember, do not give it away, but where he winds up. But, you know, here's my... I like the premise... I like the performances by everybody involved, all across the boards. Edgerton, Hedges, Nicole Kidman, Russell Crowe. I thought the movie was a little too, you know, our colleague, no, actually wasn't even Lisa Rossman. It was Bill McCuddy when we did the TV show, which we do, Talking Movies. Bill McCuddy said it sounds, before we saw it, says it sounds a little Lifetime-y. Movie for me, and I kind of agree with that. It was a little too preachy for me. I mean, there was another movie you were talking about it, Bill.
Miseducation of Cameron Post.
Right, with Chloe Grace
Moretz. That's a much better movie, I think.
That was more fun to watch, actually.
Now, not that this is a funny topic, because it's not. But there is no break.
No, but it's a topical topic.
There is no break in this. There's no levity in this. There's no, like, give me, after 20 minutes of these intense scenes, just give the audience a little break. Have somebody in the gay conversion.
Okay, well, since you set it up as something I said I wasn't going to like when I saw it as a trailer, I have to tell you that having now seen it, I think it's a really good movie.
It is a good movie. I don't think it's a great
movie. I will
movie.
Tell you that one of my really good friends, and you know I don't, like to brag about my friends, bullshit, is a writer, a screenwriter, walked out on it after about like the 30-minute mark. But I said to him last night at another event that I saw him at, like, you really missed the boat, because this is really, it does everything it should do as this kind of movie, and I was very impressed with it by the time it was done.
In The Miseducation of Cameron Post, which yes. you saw, Bill Burgundy, right. and I did not, you told me that there was one of the people in the Pray Away, or a couple of people in the Pray Away,
the gay conversion group, camp, yes.
that were kind of like, I won't say comic relief, but at least relieved the audience to some extent by injecting some humor to show the insanity of the situation.
Sarcastic humor that teenagers would normally
right. have. But this takes itself so seriously, and it's still, yes, it's a good movie, but it's not a great movie because it was just like, when I got out of there, it's like, they're just beating you over the head with a stick on this message. I got the message. I think it could have been, the screenplay could have been a little better.
But the whole point of the movie is that it beats him over the head, him being the kid, with you're not right, you're not correct, you're not what you should be. And then one of the kids has a tragic ending. Like, it walks you through his life, and then he got through that to the end, and he's now a successful, I mean, this is not giving anything away. He's now a successful writer in New York City. He moved from, can we say, like, the more
Midwest,
Arkansas, wasn't it?
Yeah, but the more not hip part of the world to, like, a better. He healed himself by getting to another place.
On my Big Apple rating scale, out of a possible 4, I would give Boy Erased 3 apples, which is a good grade.
Well, that's a good rating.
It's not 3.5. It's not 4. I'd give it 3. Could have been better, but 3 is good.
Were you uncomfortable with the guy who is gay and doesn't know he's gay?
Wasn't uncomfortable.
Is that what you're saying?
Wasn't
Neil?
Uncomfortable with anything. Just thought that it could have.
I think
your own expression, Lifetime, before you said, Bill Burgundy?
That was before I saw the movie. Wait. Don't take me out of context. That was before I saw
right.
it.
Right. I understand that your opinion changed once you saw
right.
the movie.
Okay.
But your what you thought it was going to be by using that right. expression perfectly sums up what
how
I
you
about
feel
the movie.
About it.
And I don't
right.
think that, you know,
but
necessarily.
But I think it was elevated beyond that. You don't agree.
It was certainly elevated with the production values and the cast.
No. I mean, the storyline. I think it elevated itself.
There's been some very good Lifetime movies. Don't get me wrong. It's not, there have been. I think it's Three Apples is good. All right, I want your opinion, Bill Burgundy.
I liked it. I thought the performances were good. There was one missing character who, remember there was the lesbian girl who wound
right.
up living in one of those houses? And then and just,
right, and then they said as an afterthought, here's what happened to her.
Right, and that's it. So,
right.
But it was...
Yeah.
I mean, there are a couple of things that were left unsaid, but I enjoyed it. I liked seeing Nicole Kidman as a southern mom. It was great casting.
There is a moment... Listen, again, it's a good movie. I just think it could have been better. But there is a Steve McQueen Great Escape moment in this movie where I actually started applauding in the film. And let's just leave it at that.
All right.
Like, it's like a Magdalene Sisters, a movie that I highly recommend that you rent or stream, where it's also these girls are locked in this place and can't get out, and it becomes like the Great Escape. And, you know, I kind of like that in a movie where it's like, get the fuck out of this place, you know what I mean? So, basically, yeah, it's good. It's okay. You know,
okay.
I don't know, Russell Crowe gained a hell of a lot of weight, I'll say that, you know? I mean,
he looks exactly like the real guy, that's all I'll say. I mean, I'm not saying he was perfect, but he looks like the real guy. You know who doesn't look like the real guy? Hugh Jackman as Gary Hart.
No,
I went to the premiere last night at a posh party. That,
oh, God.
Where was Neil Rosen for that party? Where was Bill Begrolli?
Neil Rosen was on.
I actually got to have breakfast with Neil.
Have you ever been to the Rainbow Room in New York City? Anyway.
regale us with
the premiere for the front runner last night at MoMA. And I will tell you that this movie about Gary Hart is not very good, even though I love Jason Reitman, who did the movie. He's done Thank You for Not Smoking. He's done Up in the Air. He's also done some shitty movies that we've been on, which is like Labor Day.
Didn't he do that movie with Tully?
He did Tully recently. In fact, there's actually
Tully's good.
Yeah, there's a brief shot in Tully that actually made it to this movie because they needed an exterior shot of a house of a lights being turned on in a house. Actually, is the house occupied by J.K. Simmons. And rather than go shoot it, he says, "No, I have a shot of that. It's from Tully." And he just cut it in.
So for those who don't know what this movie is about, or don't know the history of Gary Hart, now that we're in the era of anything goes in the news cycle, and this, let's go back to a more innocent time. What year was this? 1988.
Well, 84 for a second, and then 88 for the rest of the movie.
So Gary Hart was the front runner to be the Democratic nominee for president. Far and away the front runner. They said, like, this guy's going all the way to the convention, and he's gonna, you know, they actually thought he had a good chance to, you know, be president. And a few weeks into the campaign, it was discovered that he was having an affair, an extramarital affair, with a woman named
Donna Rice.
Donna Rice, on a boat appropriately named Monkey Business. That's the name of the boat.
Which actually, the best moment in the movie is when Johnny Carson, they get the Johnny Carson footage from The Tonight Show, right, starts saying, "Well, how do you, it's called the Monkey Business. Why would you rent that boat? Because that's crazy." So, which was real footage from The Tonight Show, which is actually really one of the best moments in the movie.
Yeah.
Well, so Gary Hart's political career, and if you think about how, I won't say how far we've come, but how far down we've gone, that his career was completely derailed politically, because it was discovered that he actually, if I'm not mistaken, told the press, "Follow me around. I'm completely innocent."
He said that to a Washington Post reporter who was one of the people following him. So when you're
a candidate, you have
a bunch of reporters that follow you. They get on the planes with you. They do all the things with you. So he said to one of these Washington Post reporters, "You know, follow me around. I'm boring. If you think I'm having affairs with people," it wasn't exactly an answer to "Are you having affairs?" But he was like, "I'm boring. Like, just follow me around." So these reporters from the Miami Herald sort of did that. They showed up in D.C. They sat outside his Georgetown apartment and they watched. And sure enough, this woman, Donna Rice, comes into the apartment or into the townhouse and leaves, and they took pictures of it. And
so
then
what
they,
kind of idiot is this guy to dare somebody while he's having an affair to please follow?
Well, that's not –
the movie does not actually show you him having an affair. In fact, it's left to
there's
your
no
imagination.
Sex. There's no sex
you don't
in the movie.
Know what you actually don't know. He denies it. She denied it, and that's all you see.
But
so
there are photographs, real life photographs of them hanging out together.
Hanging out is different than them having.
No,
sex.
I know, but they right. Okay, so yeah,
so it doesn't make it actually also makes Donna Rice out as a fairly intelligent person,
extremely intelligent. Yeah, and you know what they do a really good job of.
What was her job?
Presenting, she was a pharmaceutical salesperson.
Okay. They do a really good job.
And who was promised a job in the Gary Hart campaign.
I interrupted you. They do a really good job of what?
They do a really good job of presenting her as an intelligent woman, which is what Bill was just about sort of saying.
So So Bill Brigoli, let's start with you. Would you like? Did you like the movie? Would you recommend it? Your thoughts?
I recommend it, but it's not a great, as political movies go, it's not great. He tried to, Jason Reitman tried to copy, what was it, The Candidate? Or
I wouldn't say The Candidate as much as, you know what, I said to him last night at the party, I said, you were doing a Robert Altman movie, which was like, a lot of people are talking over each other, and there's like these long tracking shots of like, what happened and what didn't happen. And the real problem with the movie for me and for Mrs. McCuddy, who came with me, was, well, first of all, she thought it was completely boring.
There's Jason Reitman is known. The movies that you mentioned, Thank You for Smoking, Up in the Air, they are injected periodically with moments of humor in them. Up in the Air is a pretty funny movie. I mean, it's serious sections when they fire these people, because that was what Clooney's job was, and Anna Kendrick's job was to go in, because the people that ran the companies didn't have the balls to like fire these people on their own, so they hired outside.
But that's real. That happened.
I know, so that's sad, but there was lots of moments of humor along the way, making it more palatable to watch the movie. And my understanding is that there's no humor in this whatsoever.
There's some humor. There's like political sniping back and forth.
All of his all the people who work for him are funny. They're like, well, wait, you're saying this and that. They have a lot of funny moments. It's not a not funny movie. It's just a not that interesting movie. Because we know what happened, and this expresses it in a way that we can see basically what we know happened already. So tell me something else. And it fails on that level.
No. I went to a different party than you, Bill, but I got to talk to Jason Reitman, and I was talking to him about the overlapping dialogue. And I said, geez, how did you mix the sound in this movie? And he got all excited and reached into his pocket and pulled out his phone and showed me a video of his sound mixer on location. It was just the fingers of the sound mixer mixing what are called the faders, if you're familiar with electric equipment.
Sure, up and down.
Up and down as people were talking. This guy was mixing one fader to a finger. And so he was more into the geek level of stuff and less about the actual excitement of the story.
So Bill McCuddy was, Mrs. McCuddy was bored. Would you recommend? So you, from what you're saying, you really couldn't. You
can't recommend it.
Okay, what about you, Bill?
Yeah. Did you notice that? And this is something I talked to Hugh about. He doesn't make any eye contact when Gary Hart. As Gary Hart, he does not make eye contact. Yeah, that was something he picked up from talking to Gary Hart.
Oh.
So it's not the.
By the way, they make a reference to. They make one reference to Warren Beatty.
Yeah.
But the truth is, the real Gary Hart talked to Warren Beatty all the time.
True.
All the time. Warren Beatty was a guy who, like, completely talked and tried to make him a candidate. And that's not dealt with.
Yeah.
That's not dealt with.
Right. And then we wound up with Michael Dukakis.
So,
right.
Would you recommend this, Bill Brigoli?
Not really. I mean, I liked it. Would I see it again? I wouldn't bother. But I thought it was okay, but just okay.
Would you give it 2.5?
Mrs. McCuddy, who's in the next room, could not stand the movie, wanted to leave about 20 minutes in.
Hey, you want to hear my Michael Dukakis story?
Sure. More than anything.
All right, I'll bet. He was governor of Massachusetts, and he was known for taking the subway everywhere. And I would occasionally see
him. The T line.
Yeah, the T on the Green Line. And when he was thinking of running for president, he had an exploratory committee, and which is in the same building as the advertising agency I worked in. And every once in a while, without fail, he and I would end up next to each other in the men's room at adjoining urinals. And I'm going through my brain, well, what do I talk to this guy about?
What do you have to talk to him at all? I mean,
you don't have to, but you know, it's just kind of how you doing. You run into him in the men's room. So I actually said, "Geez, your people are up late all night. I worked crazy hours at the ad agency, and I noticed the lights were always on in his offices." So he talked about how hard his campaign staff was working. He asked me about my father, who at that time had just got let go from his job in a shipyard, and he was really a very nice guy.
You know, Reagan kicked his ass in the general election, if I remember historically. Wasn't that who he ran against? Did he run against Reagan or did he run against Bush? One.
Bush.
Was it Bush one? Okay. Sorry. Bush one kicked his ass in the general election. But I'll never forget the Dukakis thing where on one of the debates, they asked the question that was thrown out was, if your wife was raped, would you want to murder the guy? And very robotically said, no, what you have to do is you got to... And it was not, would you murder the guy? It was, would you want to murder the guy? And people thought he was not human. And everybody, I remember he just got a lot of flack on that particular... and it was a big... It's like people point to debates like the Nixon-Kennedy debate. They say, like, if you listen to it, I was not old enough to see it, but if you listen to it on radio, Nixon came off great, but most people watched it on TV, and Nixon refused makeup, and he was half-shaven and just looked sweaty and terrible. So there's things that people point to in each of these debates that they say possibly cost them the election. And other, so the Dukakis, it was that, and also the ad where he was, like, in military gear in a tank.
Yeah, wearing that helmet.
Thing that apparently...
Don't wear a helmet.
...cost Dukakis.
The tank was a problem.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're gonna talk about a movie now with a ridiculous title called The Nutcracker and the Four Realms, which opens this weekend. And Bill Brigoli, before we get into the movie, you heard from Keira Knightley, didn't you?
I have a little Keira Knightley. Here she is talking about the theme of the film.
Well, the message is that the girl saves the world. She doesn't get rescued. She does it herself. She rescues herself. And she rescues everybody else as well. So the message is, go on, girls. Go and save the world.
So neither Bill McCuddy nor myself saw this particular film. So Bill Brigoli did. And I want to ask you bluntly, what in the world is this all about? I mean, The Nutcracker is a famous ballet with
Tchaikovsky. Does Morgan Freeman save himself from this or not?
No, he's in it. He's in the very beginning and the very end. It was probably 3 days
I'm
of
here
work.
And I'm gone.
That's it. And pretty much the same for Helen Mirren.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, she's not in it very much either.
So what is it? Is it? Do they play the Tchaikovsky music?
Yeah, it's played. This girl gets a present from her late mother. It's a Disney movie, so naturally the mother's dead, and she's given a present from her father that was originally from her mother. Said your mother wanted you to have this, and it looks like a Fabergé egg, and it has a little keyhole in the bottom, but there's no key. And then she finds the key, and a mouse steals it. She follows the mouse into this magical realm where...
Fucking mouse.
Yeah, a damn mouse. And there she meets a soldier, a nutcracker-like soldier who vows to protect her. And she runs up again, and she also meets the Sugar Plum Fairy, played by Keira Knightley, though. Keira Knightley looks like Marilyn Monroe had an illegitimate daughter with a... cotton candy machine. It's really, her hair is like all fluffed up, and she affects this very strange
voice. Tim
Burton
sign off on this?
Tim Burton had nothing to do with
this. The script to Alice in Wonderland.
Tim Burton had nothing to do with
it. It's a Tim Burton wannabe kind of movie, but the story's not interesting. The characters are kind of weird, one-dimensional and dull, and you don't care at the end. And they do make the girl out. They try to make it like a girl power movie, like she solves the problem herself.
So what's the girl trying to do? She's get the key back?
Gets the key back, she's kind of trapped in this kingdom. She finds out she's a princess. She finds out she's a princess.
So who are we aiming this movie at, kids?
That's so often that happens. I find out I'm a princess.
That's right.
I didn't
she finds
know
out
it,
she's a
blah,
princess.
Blah, 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 blah,
and
blah.
Keira Knightley, the Sugar Plum Fairy, tries to take over the kingdom. She tries to start a war. She has this magical machine that turns little tin soldiers into full-size men.
Well, wait. Is this
men.
A series? Is this...
No.
I know what Disney tries to do. Is this going to be something going forward, or
no,
is it going to be...
No, it's not going to turn into a franchise. It's a one-off. And actually, the reason, it's Halloween, and they're opening it as a Christmas movie, is that they've got too much better movies coming out. They got Wreck-It Ralph 2, and they have
Mary Poppins
coming out for Christmas. This is kind of, let's get this thing out of the way and release it at Halloween.
Right. How badly is this thing going
to
do?
It's probably barely going to make $17 million, according to the trades.
Are they going to put any money behind it, or no?
They put a little bit, but you know what? They've made so much money this year that they could let this thing go. They could let everyone see this for free.
I don't understand how something like this even gets green-lighted. It just sounds just terrible. We're going to do The Nutcracker, but we're going to make it like Alice in Wonderland, and we're going to, you know, it just sounds kind of like
So what's opening next weekend?
Next weekend is The Girl in the Spider's Web and The Grinch.
Well, no one I've talked to likes The Girl in Spider's Web.
I have not seen it, but they offered me a screening way the hell downtown, and I'm not going to go.
If you haven't seen, I'm going to resurrect another movie that's still playing around, and it's still one of my favorite movies of the year. And if you haven't seen it, All About Nina with Mary Elizabeth Winstead and Common, the rapper Common, and
he's not in many movies.
Chase Crawford and Beau Bridges, and I highly recommend this movie. It's about a messed up. First of all, it's very timely in this era of Me Too, and it's about a messed up woman, female stand-up comic who gets messed up, gets involved in a relationship with a very messed up guy played by Common, and how they forge a friendship together and kind of try to navigate their own
messed up at this.
Their own mishigas, messed up in Yiddish, their own craziness. It's really good. It's written and directed by first time director Eva Veves, and I think although there's no money behind it, it's coming from a company called The Orchard, and they really don't have a lot of money to promote a movie like this. But if more people saw this movie, I really believe that Mary Elizabeth Winstead should get an Oscar nomination for this role.
I don't know about that. It's good. It's not great.
You don't think she deserves an Oscar?
No, no. It's really.
Deserves an Oscar nomination.
No, no.
I don't agree. I also will talk about this in a few weeks when it opens. I had the opportunity to see Green Book last night, and let's just say that right now it is on, as All About Nina is, Green Book is also going to be very near the top of my 10 best list of 2018.
Well, let's just that's more worthy.
Unless I see 10 unbelievable movies in the next couple of weeks to three,
Green Book
weeks.
Has a much better chance getting to the top of anybody's Oscar list.
But I think that might even win Best Picture, and it's we'll talk about that when we get to it, but it's with Viggo Mortensen and Mahershala Ali, who won an Oscar for Moonlight, and it's Viggo Mortensen as you've never seen him before. Trust me on that one. It ain't no regular Viggo Mortensen from either the Lord of the Rings trilogy or Walk on the Moon or any time you've seen this guy. This is very, very different. So for me, Neil Rosen, for Bill McCuddy and Bill Bregoli, thanks for sitting around talking movies with us. We'll sit around talking movies again with you next week.